Hi, everybody. Welcome to the July 2019 Houston Clutter Coaching Meetup Group. Say hi.
Hi.
Today, we just this minute figured out that today is actually the 10th anniversary of our meetup group that's been meeting since the dawn of time. Yay! But it's actually 10 years later. We're so excited to still be here and still be doing our thing. It's my favorite thing to talk to you guys about organizing. And so I'm happy to still be here trying to be helpful. So we are going to talk today about clean slate, starting fresh in a new organized space. And this has actually come up as a topic because Ed and Jaime are going to be moving in February to Tennessee. And so he has to get organized about getting out of town and moving to a new location. So we started talking about it and he's like, well, maybe you should talk about what I should be doing for my move. So that is what we're gonna talk about today. Moving is one of those really serious chores. No one thinks moving is fun and nobody thinks it's an easy thing to do, right? It is something that requires a whole bunch of effort, and usually there's one of three ways that you try to do it. The first way is that you procrastinate 100% and you wait until the night before and you throw everything in boxes in a big old jumble, and the next day you sling it all into a truck and drive it and you barf it out the other end. And the result is that you have a really chaotic move and that you are exhausted at the end. Now, typically this is the method that you do when you're a young person and it involves a U-Haul and your friends and some beer and pizza, right? Like, you call your pals and say, come help me sling my stuff. And so it ends up in a big jumble, stuff gets broken, things don't make it, you leave things behind, and it's a big chaos, right? So the second version is that you wait until a couple of weeks before the move, and then you think, okay, now what I need to do is I need to start packing up everything that I own, because I need to get it on the moving truck, and you might actually hire some real movers this time. It's people that get paid to move things for a living, have a big truck and some dollies, and you will pack everything up, and you'll spend the 2 weeks that you take off work or that you arrange to be at halftime or whatever, and you'll spend all that time packing. And then the last day of the 2 weeks is the movers come and take the stuff, and they load it and unload it at the other end, and it barfs into the apartment, and then you go, okay, I gotta go back to work. And so the whole unpacking part of that process is not considered at all. Or it's a last minute thing, or you're getting dressed the next day to go to work and you're madly opening boxes trying to find the shoes to go with that outfit. And it's a little less stressful, but not any better thought out. So the third option is why I'm calling this the clean slate, because this is the clean slate planning version of moving, which is putting some thought into the process and starting in advance of the move as far as possible and going through the process of decluttering the contents and looking at all of your furniture and mapping out the new space and deciding what will actually fit and what won't fit and going through the planning process just like you would for, you planned the wedding, right? It's a big expensive thing. You're gonna spend a whole bunch of money and you're gonna pay real live movers to come and move your stuff, and you're planning that move around your whole family is moving and all of the things they have to change that go with that. And so treating it like the new start that it is and the project that is worth your long-term planning and attention. And that is, of course, the topic that I'm gonna talk about today. We're gonna talk about the long expanded version of this and how it would make your move less stressful and more successful and more in support of you starting a new life. And that is what we want for you. We want to have a great new start in a new place, and included, right? So we see move as a pack it all kind of approach. Typically, when people think I got to plan the move, what they plan is how they're going to pack, what they're going to pack, and then getting movers and getting it offloaded and unpacked at the other end. And so they sort of talk about those three aspects, they think about those three things in their mind, but they don't really expand those out at all or do any advanced planning or space planning as part of the process. And so it gets you there to do it that way, but it doesn't reduce the stress very much, And it also doesn't, it allows you to take a whole bunch of stuff with you that you don't really need that may or may not fit when you get to the other end, right? So we are going to talk about if you do this process and you try to plan for the new space and declutter on the back, on the front end, how that will improve your process. So I have a list here of things to consider, like if you move it all in when the movers come and they take the truck off and you just move it all in, then it never fits exactly how it did in the old house, right? So imagine that your new dining room is 30% smaller than your old dining room. So in the current house, you have a perfectly lovely dining table and 8 chairs that fits in the existing dining room. But you get to the new house, and the new house, the dining room is 30% smaller. Or it has a French door where in the third wall where there is no such door in the existing wall. Or there's windows in different places, or the ceilings are higher or lower. That shape of the dining room may affect whether that table will fit or not. So it's not just enough to say, I have a dining room table and chairs, and so therefore I'm covered because I have a dining room in the old house and I have a dining room in the new house. You also have to consider, this dining room is a rectangle with a cutout and a, you know, windows on two ends, and this one is a completely different shape with some French doors, and it's not gonna work, right? It's a shorter room, it's a longer room, it's a taller room. I think the biggest thing that people do with their furniture is they decide, I love this piece of furniture, therefore it's moving with me. Instead of, I love this piece of furniture that is the dimensions of this tall and this wide and this deep, and I want it to fit in the dining room, except there is no such wall in the new house. One of my client experiences with this was walking around the house and having the woman tell me everywhere we went. In the old house, this worked like this. In the old house, I was able to do this. In the old house, this piece of furniture fit here. Like, but you're not in the old house anymore, and that doesn't help you now. So we have to let go of how it was in the old house, and we have to focus on how it's going to be in the new house. And I think if you love all your furniture, or there's big pieces of it that you are attached to, or it's the family heirloom, or it came from your mother, or you bought it for your anniversary, or whatever, you also considered the shape and style of all the rooms when you bought that stuff, right? Except for the things you inherit from your parents, which you just wedge in wherever it goes, right? But generally, if you're making your own purchases, you're considering the existing space when you make those purchases. And so they don't often translate to the new space. So yes, you can take the dining table and maybe you can put it in the breakfast nook, or you can take the breakfast nook table and put it in the dining room in the new house. You may be able to shuffle a little bit, but you're going to lose some layout just because you're in a new floor plan with new square footage, whether it's larger or smaller. I mean, I've seen people go from houses with all closed off rooms with doors to an open concept room house. And the transition from open concept to open concept meant that they lost a whole bunch of walls. So they had a huge amount of artwork that they had no place to hang because they lost basically all the interior walls, right? So you have to consider your new layout when you're making these choices about what can go. And we start out talking about the big pieces of furniture. Like if I'm standing looking at a house and I'm in the living room of a client and here's a bunch of furniture in the living room and then there's a whole bunch of stuff everywhere, I'm looking at all the stuff in the cabinets, on the counters, and they're talking to me about where the couch is gonna go. Like, yeah, okay, so after the couch is placed, then what about the rest of the stuff? So the second thing to consider is that in addition to measuring and getting clear about where all that furniture is gonna go, or if it's all gonna go, you then have to secondarily look at all of your, what's in all the closets, what's in all the drawers, what's in all the cabinets, what's sitting on top of all of the furniture, what about all the artwork that's hanging on the walls, what about the stuff that's in the cabinet over the refrigerator? You have been squirreling things away in your house for some time, and the longer that you've lived there, the less clear you are about how much stuff is in the house. I'm just gonna tell you right now. So like your parents' house, I think that if you've been living there for a long time, you're going to be opening cabinets and pulling things out and going, what on earth, I totally forgot XYZ was in here. So you make a plan, you need to make a plan for the furniture, and we can talk about that in more detail, but you also have to consider the contents. And going through and decluttering those contents will go a huge way to not making you crazy when it's time to pack. And as people run out of time and they get more frantic about moving, they start making less and less decisions about moving, right? And so what that means is that as they find caches of, oh, I forgot about this cabinet under the sink, and you open it up and you just like sweep it all into a box, right? As you're running out of time and getting more frantic. So considering all of those contents up front and going through and giving yourself the lead time to filter it slowly over time can only make your life better. What I'm saying is only going to make your life better. And the ultimate goal here is you don't want to be moving things. You don't want to be spending your time packing, paying the movers to move, spending your time unpacking so that you can throw the box away and take it to Goodwill. So anything that you can recycle, get the trash out of there, send the things off to the kids that there's keepsakes, whatever you can do to thin that herd before you start packing will only be in service to the future you. Everything that goes in a box has to come out of a box. And if you don't take it out of the box and you put 10 boxes in the closet for dealing with later, I swear they'll still be there 3 years from now and you'll be calling me to come and empty that closet for you. When I moved, I had to move about 3 months after my mother passed away, and there was a certain amount of unpacking that I did, and then there was these 10 or 12 boxes that went into a closet that was all decorations. Like, I can't think about decorating right now. I can't deal with that. And so they stayed in my closet for a while, and I had to like yell at myself and go get those boxes out and open them up one at a time and make this stuff go away, because it wasn't the best time for me to be trying to pack. And so if I had been able to do my professional process like normal, a lot of the stuff that moved would not have moved with me. And so I speak from experience. I'm just saying, there's always something that goes on the move that you get to the other end and you're like, what was I thinking? And you lose that ability to make those decisions specifically because you're tired, you're stressed, you're out of time. And so any amount of lead time that you can give yourself is perfect. My best clients for downsizing for this process was a couple that bought into a high-rise assisted living place, independent living, and they called me 15 months before the construction was supposed to be complete to start the process. And they had been in the home for over 30 years. They had both been retired for a decade. They were not young people, right? And they did not have huge stamina. He had back problems, yeah. So there was impediment to them doing anything in a hurry. And so I was super proud of them that they called me so far in advance. And so I went to their house every 3 weeks for 15 months before they were ready. And then the movers came and packed. All I did was work on decluttering the house the whole time. And we had Salvation Army come and pick up twice. And we had somebody completely different empty the garage. So it was a huge amount of work that we did just to make sure we weren't taking too much stuff to the apartment. And you know, there, when you're downsizing, when you're going from a larger place to a much smaller place at that time in your life, you're losing a huge amount of square footage. And so it's really hard to not over jam the apartment with too much furniture and too much stuff. So I was really aiming for making sure that we didn't pack more than she really wanted to be there. And she was on top of it already with her own. She had the floor plan out and she was measuring the furniture and she was making little maps of where everything was gonna go. I'm like, awesome, you're already on it. She was a librarian, so she was all about planning. So she was able to do that and talk about furniture and decide what needed to be replaced and what was too big and what needed to be left behind. And they did a really good job about that. And as a result, even with all that planning, she was a wreck on move day. She was terrified. She was so wigged out about it because it had been so long since she moved. And so I went and held her hand on move day. But then I was also able to unpack on that day, and we got most of it unpacked as the movers were bringing stuff up. We were unpacking boxes and putting things away, and we were able to get almost all of it unpacked for her during that long day. And so they were in, at the end of the move, they were in and unpacked, which was awesome. And that was totally because they spent all that time up front getting things out of the way so that we did not move a thing up into that apartment that they didn't want to be there. And we didn't have to unpack anything and go, oh, nope, that's not staying, and take it back out again, which was wonderful. So if you're not in that situation, if you're in the middle of your life, maybe you're going from a smaller house to a bigger house, it's not exactly the same scenario, right? But you can only be in service to yourself if you thin out what doesn't need to go with you anymore, right? And I think of it as dead weight. If you've got some dead weight shoved into a cabinet somewhere that went in when the kids were 5 and now the kids are 25 and it hasn't seen the light of day since then, it's time for that stuff to come back out, right? And go on its merry way. It does not have to go in the moving truck with you, is what I'm saying. Okay. If you have to sell some furniture on this end, so imagine that you have a couple of big pieces that you know aren't going to translate. If you have to sell it on this end, then consider it a win that you're getting to sell it now and make a little bit of money, and then you get to go buy some new furniture on the other end, right? Like, you're going to be your own interior decorator and go looking for the fancy table that fits in the new dining room space instead of the one that's too big to fit in there now. Getting all of those contents sold, if you're married to letting go of stuff and getting money for it, then that increases the lead time that you want, because you're going to have to go through a process of having an estate sale or doing it an auction thing, or listing them one at a time on the Nextdoor app, or doing the eBay sellers, or whatever you end up doing to make that stuff sell. And that process of being a store for your own stuff, it takes some time and effort. And you're never gonna get the $5,000 that you originally paid for the table. That's not gonna happen, right? So there is a certain amount of time that you have to bake in longer if you wanna turn stuff over for money on the front end. And the alternative is, it's your favorite armoire, you loved it, it's beautiful in the high-ceilinged new living room, and in the new house, you're not gonna have the high-ceiling living room and it won't fit anymore, but you can't bear to let go of it, and so you get the movers to take it, they offload it into a storage unit, and then it sits there for a decade, and then you sell it. But do you really wanna do that? No, you don't. So I'm asking you to be honest with yourself about what you're gonna do with the piece of furniture that won't fit, that you're in love with. And you may have to, like, you know, get somebody to talk you out of it. Honey, we really don't need to pay the movers to move the 5,000 pound armoire that's in 3 pieces, because there's no place for it to go. And you don't want to pay for it 6 times over by leaving it in storage room for 10 years. And I've had clients do that, where they put it in, you know, they inherit the stuff from their parents, it goes in the storage unit, they can't face it, it sits there for a decade, and then they pay me to sell it and get the stuff out, and everything that they make, they pay me in fees for the time that I've spent to make it happen. So, yeah, you might as well sell it now. Rip off the Band-Aid, make it disappear. You also have to consider that sometimes in changing, like, people move from a regular house to a townhouse, or they move and they're moving to a duplex, or they're moving into a high rise, right? One of my clients just left a house she raised her kids in that had a big yard and a big garage, right? And then she moved into a high rise apartment. Well, the garage just went poof. Right? Like, everything that was in the garage now has nowhere to live unless you want it in the apartment with you, which you do not, right? So you have to consider that maybe you have a patio now and you're not going to have a patio in the new place, and so you may lose some functionality on the way. And you need to consider, we tricked out the patio and now we have no patio. So there's no point in moving that furniture with. We need to let somebody else have it. So part of looking at the contents is also evaluating the processes that you do in the house now to function, the organizing systems that you're using, the storage capacity and design that you have. So maybe the spice racks that you have in the existing house will fit in the new drawer in the new house, and maybe they won't. You don't know how many times I've watched people go, oh, this is my spice thing, and they go to put it in the drawer, and the drawer is 1/4 inch too short, or not wide enough, or not tall enough. It's like, oh, it won't fit. And what was a perfect system in the old house is now not a perfect system in the new house. And so considering all of the ways that you, as you're evaluating your contents, all of the ways that you currently organize your stuff, and trying to decide as you look at your floor plan, do you think that's still going to work? imagine you have a laundry sorter that has three little baskets on wheels, right? And it's something that's probably that wide, and it's a foot deep, and it's, you know, however tall. And it, in your laundry room now, it's a room with a door. And so you have a third wall, and you can park that sorter in the room against the wall. But then you go to the new house, and the new house, the laundry room is a pass-through. So you're walking through it on the way to something. And so you have two walls, and one of them has the washing machine, the dryer in it, and you only have one wall available, and so the laundry sorter won't work there anymore because it'll be in the middle of the path. Well, can you take that laundry sorter because you love it, and will it work in your new closet? Well, maybe you can put it in the walk-in closet, but then you're going to be tripping over it. So these are the kinds of things that you have to look through your house for, the processes that you use and you love right now, and how they function for you, and what problems they're solving for you, and consider whether that solution will solve that problem in the new house. So maybe the containers for the bath products that you use in a closet that's inside the bathroom works because there's a closet inside the bathroom. And in the new house, there isn't a closet inside the bathroom. That closet is in the hall. And it's only a foot deep instead of 3 feet deep or whatever. So there may be some translation how you store the cleaning products under the sink, or where you put the clothes to be hung up again. Or there's no telling. All through the house, you're going to have things where you've deployed systems and products that you're going to try to use in the new house, but they may not all work. So you want to sort of go through as you're getting ready for a move like this and see and notice, oh, this is what I'm using in the fridge. This is what I'm using in the pantry. This is what I'm using under the sink. This is what I'm using for bath. This is what I've done with the, you know, nasty chemicals. This is where the laundry stuff is happening. This is how I'm processing the clothes with my kids. And you're going to have to evaluate those for translation. See if it'll go to the new house. One thing that always sets people off is about the paper. So the example that I have in my head is that somebody, they moved into a house and it had a big round kitchen that has a huge island in the middle. And then off to a little corner was this little desk, and there's a cabinet, and it's supposed to be the kitchen office, right? Except it's kind of in the big middle of everything, and it's really just a landing place. I don't know what contractor originally thought up the kitchen office idea, but it's sort of universally a fail everywhere I see it installed. I mean, no one finds it comfortable to sit at it. They always feel like they're out of the, it's either not private enough, or it's too, crunched, or there's not enough storage, or blah, blah, blah. Like, it's always a fail. And so trying to decide where the mail's going to land in the new house, where you're going to sit and do work at home. Does somebody work from home already? Somebody was just saying on the phone to me earlier that Anne was saying that her husband took the spare room as his office, which means that she has the office off the kitchen as her office, and it's not very functional for her. It doesn't really work. And so trying to plan what you're going to do with paper, where you're going to store paper, where the mail's going to come in when you come into the house. Thinking about that kind of stuff in advance will help you, because there will be mail waiting for you at the new place, right? Just like you're leaving mail behind, there will be mail waiting for you on the new side, right? So you want to think about your mail process. I think it's a really important goal for this, as you're planning a move like this, one of the goals you should aim for is to have no boxes on the other end that you're afraid to open or that you want to ignore. And I know what's in those ignore boxes. They were we packed it at the last minute because we didn't have time to go through everything, and I'll go through it later. So what I'm saying to you is go through it before you go. Make it a goal to get through everything before you, all those projects about, I have to look through all that paper, I have to shred all that stuff, don't take those projects with. Execute those plans and don't pack them up to go with you on the other end, because if you have boxes that you're afraid to open, I've had people say that to me, I'm afraid to open that box, or I don't want to deal with that right now, I know what's in there, I'm not looking at that, and I always have to sort of go, okay, it's probably not as bad as you think, let's see if we can make it smaller, let's see if we can get it out of the box and store it a different way while you wait to work on it. And then when we get into it, it's really that we're just climbing over their emotions of, oh God, it's going to be a really, really hard project and I don't want to face it. And so it allows them to, like I hold their hand while we go through the paper, or we dig through the stuff, and it's not as bad as they think it's going to be. And sometimes I've gone through and eliminated half the box and left a smaller project, but then I've also removed the cardboard box that's waiting to be, it's not sitting there mocking you anymore, right? It's a much smaller project. And so I have seen a lot of those. I'm ignoring the box. I'm afraid of the box. I've seen those in every house. And so I would make it a goal not to end up with one of those boxes at the other end, because you have done all of your decluttering and you only packed what you wanted, and everything that's coming out is something you already made a very conscious decision is going to stay, and you know what you're going to do with it. Or you know what you're hoping you're going to do with it. And granted, you know, every plan has to be adjusted, and when you get there, the couch may not actually fit on the wall, or you may have to move something somewhere or whatever. You'll have to adapt some, of course. But just giving yourself... What that meant for my client that moved to the assisted living place was, because she had drawn out the plan and she had put all the furniture on the map and she knew where everything was supposed to go, it gave her the ability to tell the movers, this goes in that room against that wall, this goes over here. And that was very soothing to her, that she had the correct instructions to give the movers, because the movers don't know or care, frankly, where it goes. And if you give them no direction, they're just going to go put it in a room somewhere. So, you really want the strong man carrying the furniture. You don't want to be moving it around later. So if you can at least give yourself that much of a plan so that you know where the basic pieces are going to go and you can give those instructions, it will make it less stressful for you. And it will, you know, it will make it smoother for the movers, because they'll just do what you tell them to do and be done and on to the next thing. So that's always helpful. I have to put out the caveat that sometimes you don't get to move with 15 months of a plan, right? Part of the reason that there was a 15-month plan for them was that the building was being constructed. So everybody was buying in and waiting around for the building to go up. So that's why they had the lead time to call me. And sometimes it's, you move because my husband just got offered a promotion and we have to be out of here in 2 days, or we have to be gone in 6 weeks, or he's leaving now and I have to follow behind, or my parents have had a medical emergency and I have to move home. So there may be reasons why none of this works for you. And I understand that. And that what that means is you get the shortest, fastest path that you can and do a bunch of work on the other end. But anything that you can do to thin out what you take and make some decisions about leaving behind furniture you think that won't work will make your future self happy, and it will be supportive to you on the other end. And so that's what I'm hoping for you. That's what I'm hoping that you can go with. And I think that's all my 2 cents. So does anybody have questions for me today? Mr. Ed, the king of the move. He has to move a pet. So yes. A pet is a whole nother ball of wax. When I talk to people about pets, keeping the pet out of the middle of it is the best thing you can do. So way before the movers show up, just take the pet somewhere else. Because you will spend all your time worrying about what's happening with the pet, and is the pet safe, and has the pet escaped, and have they really kept the door closed, and yada yada. Out. The other thing is that if you're in one of those fire drill moves, and you don't have enough time to do a whole bunch of planning in advance, that means you're going to pack everything quickly, and you're not going to really know where everything is, and you're not going to have time to unpack in a hurry. And so make sure that you take a piece of luggage and pack everything you need to function, to take a shower and get dressed and go to work and sleep at night, into a piece of suitcase like you were going to be gone for a week at a hotel. Use it as your marker, and then add a pair of sheets and a towel. And any pet food and the coffee maker into your luggage. And that way you can live out of the suitcase for a week while you run back to work or run to the hospital to deal with your parents or whatever you're doing. And you don't have to madly rip open boxes trying to find fill in the blank. Like, just pretend like you're living in your house like it's a hotel for a week and prepare for that.
I'll add one more thing to that list, and that is a shower curtain liner.
Yes.
Because the last 2 times I moved, after we're finished doing everything else, we realized we don't have a shower curtain liner, because we didn't bring the old nasty one from the place we left.
Right.
We threw it away, and
now you have nothing.
Like, you know,
midnight.
10:30 at night, trying to find a shower curtain liner so you can take a shower.
That's a good one.
One issue you could address is, you know, we're going to move into an apartment first. We don't, you know, ultimately we may end up in a house or something, but the first place will be an apartment while we, you know, move ourselves there and get familiar with the city. And with the apartment, with the way the rental market works nowadays, you don't necessarily know until, you know, 6 to 8 weeks before the move
where you're going to be,
get the apartment you had in mind, because your number one choice might not have a place available.
You're right.
You know? And so we can't do a ton of advanced planning.
So you don't know about the floor plan, is what
you're
saying.
The floor plan, the specifics of the space, yeah. I mean, we know the approximate square footage, but...
So I know that you have been looking at a few floor plans, right? So I would take the big pieces, like, you know, the bed's going, you know, the bookcase is going, whatever. Look at some of the big pieces and see, in these three floor plans that we're considering, will they work? And if they work in two out of three of them, then you can probably say, okay, let's count on that going, right? And you may not be able to be 100% exact at this point, but you can decide, I have these 15 large pieces of furniture that require moving men to lift them. Do they make sense everywhere I go or nowhere I go? And there may be some that you're like, we're over that one. We don't care about that anymore. It needs to go. You know, the kayak is going, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe some of the desk action or some of the, you know, there, I'm trying to think of what's in your house. But there may be some little pieces that you've moved a couple of times already, and maybe you just let it go and count on, okay, we're going to have to put our mail somewhere, and we're going to find something new that goes with whatever the new space is at the time.
Yeah.
And this really applies particularly to... when you have large pieces of furniture. So I know you have one sideboard that is pretty big, and there are other things, like, you know, there's, you probably have some kind of dining table, and you have a, you might have a sideboard, you might have a buffet with, or a china cabinet, or, you know, you walk around and think about those big pieces of furniture and how in love with them you are, and whether you need to consider them as you pick an apartment. Like, it may be that I want the sideboard, it came from my grandmother, it's not leaving, I don't care what, you have to take it out of my dead hands, then you need to find a space where the sideboard works. Because if it doesn't work, then you got to go put it in storage somewhere and pay to keep it until you move to a house, which you don't want to do either. There's a certain amount of furniture that you know is going to go, like, you know, the bed's going, right? Although, you know, that, even that one would, might be, the room is smaller, the king bed doesn't fit anymore. So,
no, that's non-negotiable.
Right? right, the king bed has got to go. So, there's certain furniture that you can rank the furniture, like, this has got to fit, therefore we have to pick something where this fits. And then there's furniture that, like, I don't care about this furniture, and if we can't fit it into a floor plan, I'm okay leaving it behind. So you can sort of put it on a maybe list until you get down to your 2 weeks before, and then that piece stays behind if it doesn't, if it, you think it won't fit in the end. Yes, ma'am.
So using the spices and maybe a new drawer as an example. So say your spice containers are 4 inches tall, and then you, when you toured the new apartment or whatever, you maybe stuck your hand in the drawer real quick to see how big it is, and you find out it's maybe only about 3 inches tall. And you realize, okay, now I need new containers. Is it better to shop for those containers during the move prep, or is it better to just kind of toss them in bags, then move them, and then go shop for the nice new containers? And, you know, and this can apply to all kinds of different products that might be useful in the new place.
Yeah, I would, unless you have something very, very specific that requires you to order it, something in advance, I would not, so that's the fun part, right? Buying product is the fun part. And so instead of decluttering, people will start getting on Amazon and shopping for stuff they're going to take with to use in the new house. And then they have shipped to the old apartment, and then they have to move. No, don't do that. I would save the shopping for the other end. So that you can very clearly measure and test. You can stand in the kitchen and go, I don't really like the spices in this drawer. I used to have them in the drawer, but in this kitchen that doesn't work because it's too far from the stove. And so I would rather have them in this cabinet up here sitting on a, you know, tier. So you need to be able to evaluate in the existing, in the future place, where it will work best, and then go get products for that. Because, and so in that instance, I would thin the herd of the spices on the back end, like throw out all the spices that are dead and nobody's using, and you're never gonna use that cumin again and whatever. I tried the Indian spice and I hate it, whatever. Get rid of all the stuff that you're not gonna move, and then let it go in its existing containers. And so you don't have to worry about identifying it if you don't wanna bag it or anything. You don't wanna make it harder than it is. Get to the other end, figure out where you want it to go, and then go find yourself a product. And then you can transfer them all. Lots of people use, you know, tall skinny containers for the pasta or the flour or whatever, and it works because the pantry has shelves that are tall enough, and then the new pantry, it's not the same shape. So you may have to like trade out products to work with what the new contractor built into your new space. And so being able to consider that right in front of you, standing in the kitchen, standing in the bathroom and looking at it, will make a huge difference in how you pick. You can, you know, you can guess, but you know how many times you bought things on Amazon and it shows up and it's like, oh, it's the wrong shape, it's the wrong size, it's a half an inch too long, it's a million products out there in the world that Amazon's shipping around that don't work out. And so save yourself the hassle and do it on the other end. Any other questions?
Yes.
Okay.
What do you do for someone that has a lot of big pieces of furniture that they paid a lot of money for?
Of course.
And they don't want to just give it away.
Of course.
They're waiting around to sell it, but it's like, really don't know what sites to go on or how to get rid of it. It's like, well, I can't really move around the room to get to the closet to sort through other things until I get rid of all this stuff that's piled up in the middle.
Right.
So
that was two questions.
Yeah, where right. do I go? How do I start that process of actually
getting the furniture out?
Yeah, you know, by website or whatever. What would be the best way to handle that part?
So here's the thing about furniture. Unless you have bought super collectible designer that from the 50s that is still holding its value, like a Herman Miller chair used to cost $1,000, it still costs $1,000, right? Like there's a small amount of furniture and a small amount of it out there still that has a value that is similar to what you paid for it. But any furniture that you've bought and used for a long time is like the car driving off the lot. It has decreased in value. And what you spent to have it new in your house, delivered by the guys from the pretty showroom, has nothing to do with what it is now. And it's a big part of my job to convince people that they're not going to get $5,000 back from the $5,000 that they spent, right? And I was just on the phone today with Jeremy from MaxSold. And MaxSold is an auction site. And he's like, you know, we want to treat the stuff with respect, but we want the house to be empty. And that $5,000 armoire is not going to, we're going to be able to sell it for $200. That it will leave the house, but they will not make a gazillion dollars off of it, right? And that's really the truth. There may be individual, you know, you've got 35 pieces of furniture in the house and one of them or two of them have some value as an antique or to a collector because the designer that made it or whatever. And even so, it won't probably be anything close to what it was originally paid for. And the rest of it will be, you know, yard sale value. If it's the best retail possible that you can get is doing an auction, doing some kind of estate sale. But then the people that make that, in essence, pop-up retail situation happen, then they get their 40%. So you're not getting it all. Like, you may pay somebody to create the retail environment in which you can get the most possible for that item, and you're gonna have to give up 40% of it to the person that did all the work. So explaining that retail situation to someone is part of my job as an organizer. And it's part of your job as the owner of the stuff to get adjusted to, yeah, I've had this bookcase for 20 years and I paid $200 for it and now it's worth 10. And I need to not pay the movers to move the thing that's worth $10. I need to not put the thing worth $10 in storage on the other end. I need to give it up and, you know, buy something that works better on the other end. And it's, you know, it's the nature of our furniture market that it doesn't, you know, when you use it for 20 years, it's you get your money's worth out of it by sitting on the couch for 20 years, right? It doesn't sit there like a piece of jewelry and hold value.
We have several IKEA pieces,
right?
And IKEA, they have, you know, distinct classes of furniture. But like their office furniture is made to withstand a nuclear war, but most of their home furnishings are pretty, you know, economical.
Right.
And so they may survive one move, but with what it takes to move, you know, with the jostling and the
bouncing
and the truck and all of that, the little pieces that hold them together and the particle board stuff and the joints all sort of rattle apart and
so get loosened and get cracked and all that.
Decided up front that there are like three or four IKEA things that are not moving this time.
Well, and particularly because you're moving across country, right? Like if you might be able to put it in the back of a truck and get it across town on a 20-minute drive, but the idea that it's going to go in the back of a moving truck and it's going to be in a truck for 3 days bouncing around, yeah, like it's not going to survive. What you end up at the other end is going to be, you know, kindling. And so it's not worth paying to move it when you can spend that money and go buy something and build it fresh in the new space, and then it won't be compromised. I mean, we've all taken the bookcase out and your friends pulled the bookcase off the truck and then you realize that one joint at the back is completely collapsed and the shelf has fallen in and there's no fixing it. Like, yeah, don't bother with that kind of stuff, right? Don't make it work. Get something new. It's, you know, this is why it's called clean slate, right? Most of us think of moving as we have to take all of our possessions and throw them in the sack and drag them to the new place and empty them out. But you can think of this from a completely different way. You can think of it as, I'm going to cherry pick my stuff and I'm going to go set up a new life in a new space. And I can furnish it there and I can decorate it there and I can customize it to the space as it is. And it will be a completely new way of living. And you're leaving some of your burden behind, and you're leaving some of the, you know, the history behind, but it's also less weight, right? It's something that you don't have to carry around for forever. And so it's why moving is one of the best decluttering tools out there, because yeah, lots of people leave stuff behind when they realize they have to pack up their entire house and how painful that is, right? One of my organizer friends just did a lady who was a hoarder, and they had to de-hoard the house and pack it, and about halfway through they realized that there was bed bugs, and so then they had to pay to have everything treated, and some of it had already been loaded in the first truck, and the truck was on its way to across the country. So they had to pull the truck off into a warehouse and pull everything out and treat it all there on the truck and treat everything on this end that was still here, and it was a big nightmare. And that was a 3-truck move to get it all gone. So the extreme version of you keep everything is that it takes more than one truck, God forbid. And the best case scenario is it takes a part of a truck and you get to customize in the new place so that you're not spending a whole bunch of money on people hauling some stuff around. You're spending your money on help to leave things behind and help to pack and then making it pretty on the new end and exact fit for the new place. And it's totally worth it. Any other questions? It's 8:00 almost. So I'm gonna stop. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you came. And I am so happy we made it 10 years.